Jaya Gopi Jana Palapa Kiri Varadhari. Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Jamunatira Vanachari. Jamunatira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Kishori ki jai, Jagannath Pandit Dev Sivajima ni ki jai, Gornatai ki jai, Shatapa ki jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, today we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 13, text 63 and 64, which will bring us to the end of this chapter. We shall chant responsively text 63. Utaya Utaya Krishnasya Jirasya Padayo Patan Ashte Mahitvam Pragdrishtam Smritva Smritva Puna Puna Utaya Utaya Krishnasya Chirasya Padayo Patan Aste Mahitvam Pragdrishtam Smritva Smritva Puna Puna Utaya Utaya Krishnasya Chirasya Padayo Patan Aste Mahitvam Pragdrishtam Smritva Smritva Puna Puna Utaya Utaya Krishnasya Chirasya Padayo Patan Aste Mahitvam Pragdrishtam Smritva Smritva Puna Puna Utaya Utaya Krishnasya Dasya Padayo Patan Aste Mahitvam Pragdrishtam smitva, smitva, puna, puna. So the word for word, utaya, utaya, rising repeatedly, Krishnasya, of Lord Krishna, Chirasya, for a long time, Padayo, at the lotus feet, Patan, falling down, Aste, remained, Mahitvam, the greatness, Prakrishtam, which he had previously seen, Smritva, Smritva, remembering and remembering, Puna, Puna, again and again. And the translation for text 63, rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time, Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. Purport. As stated in one prayer, Shrutim apare smritam itare, Bharatam anye bhajanta bhava vitaha, Aham iha nandam vande yasya linde param brahma. In the translation for that, and it's from Padyavali 126, let others study the Vedas, Smriti and Mahabharat, fearing material existence, but I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard is crawling the Supreme Brahman. Nanda Maharaj is so great that the Parabrahman is crawling in his yard, and therefore I shall worship him. Brahma was falling down in ecstasy because of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who exactly resembled a human child. Brahma was naturally astonished. Therefore, with a faltering voice, he offered prayers, understanding that here was the Supreme Person. And text 64. Shanai ratotaya vimrincha lochane mukundam udvikshya vinamra kundaraha Pritanjali prasraya van samahita save patur gadgadaya la telaya. And the translation for text 64. Then, rising very gradually and wiping his two eyes, Lord Brahma looked up at Mukunda, Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated and his body trembling, very humbly began with faltering words to offer praises to Lord Krishna. Purport. Brahma, being very joyful, began to shed tears, and he washed the lotus feet of Krishna with his tears. Repeatedly he fell and rose as he recalled the wonderful activities of the Lord. After repeating obeisances for a long time, Brahma stood up and smeared his hands over his eyes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that the word lochane indicates that with his two hands he wiped the two eyes on each of his four faces. Seeing the Lord before him, Brahma began to offer prayers with great humility, respect, and attention. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Stealing of the Boys and Calves by Brahma. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Militamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadante Ham. Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Yuta Padakamalam, Sri Guru, Vaishnavamsha, Sri Rupam, Sagrajatam, Sahagana, Raghunatam, Vitam, Sajivam, Sadvaitam, Sabadutam, Parijana, Saitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Pada, Sahagana, Lalita, Sri Vishaka, Vitamsha, Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tsaribhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimataram Padaswami iti namine namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimata Bhaktivedanta Swami iti namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pashacha Desha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Kavi Kanapura writes, so this is from his writing, may the two lotus feet of Krishna, the enemy of Putana, always protects us. His delicate toes resemble the petals of a pink lotus flower, and his slender ankles resemble the stalk of a lotus. His lotus feet hold the honey of his devotees' faith. The streams of light emanating from his toenails resemble the stamens of a lotus. The kumkum powder from the budding breast of Radhika, which cling to his foot soles, resembles the pollen of a lotus flower. This is from Ananda Vrindavan Champu. And I'm reading this for a particular purpose, because it's at these two lotus feet of Lord Krishna that Lord Brahma is, as it's quoted here, rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time. This was from text 64, the text that we had chanted together. So this rising and falling, you could say rather it's the falling down itself, is actually ecstasy. And this is stated by Srila Prabhupada. So different features of ecstatic love for Lord Krishna. is described in Nectar of Devotion. And remembrance is on this list of these different features of ecstatic love. There's 32 of them. So, just by the fact that we're hearing that Lord Brahma is remembering what he's just seen over and over again, he's remembering the Lord's greatness that he had just seen. So, this greatness that he had just seen was seeing Lord Krishna appearing as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. so this is interesting. Why it indicates a particular greatness on the part of Lord Krishna to be appearing as a simple cowherd boy in Vrindavan, it means he wasn't demonstrating outwardly his opulence. He was merely standing there, just like an innocent boy, with some food in his hand. and he was loitering, you could say, with his cowherd boyfriends, his calves and cows. So this is the particular scene that Lord Brahma is remembering over and over again. Just this scene of Lord Krishna standing as an innocent little boy holding a morsel of food in his hands with his cowherd friends, his cows and calves. And this was described several verses back in text 61. Then Lord Brahma saw the absolute truth, who is one without a second, who possesses full knowledge and who is unlimited, assuming the role of a child in a family of cowherd men and standing all alone, just as before, with a morsel of food in his hand, searching everywhere for the calves and his cowherd friends. So this is the scene that Lord Brahma is remembering over and over again, and this remembering over and over again indicates ecstasy on the part of Lord Brahma. That's how it's stated by Srila Prabhupada. And in Nectar of Devotion, there's that particular listing that this remembrance over and over is a symptom of ecstatic love being present in the heart. So Srila Prabhupada gives the reason that it's so significant, this particular scene that's arousing this ecstatic love for Lord Brahma. He gives the reason, Srila Prabhupada, why this is so significant. He did not see Krishna as Chaturbhuja, meaning his four-armed form, the opulent Narayan. Rather, he simply saw an innocent boy. So the further significance is that Brahma could understand that although Krishna wasn't demonstrating his power had he been in his Narayan form, he was still the same supreme person. So this is such a stimulant for ecstatic love, just this particular understanding. And in a summary study of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Prabhupada says that there are many symptoms of ecstatic love caused by remembering Krishna. And the example that's given in Nectar of Devotion of this kind of remembrance being a symptom of ecstatic love is just put in a neutral way, that a devotee who wasn't even very attentive. He would sometimes remember, just suddenly, seemingly out of madness, the lotus feet of Krishna. And this is a devotee that wasn't even being very attentive. He would remember the lotus feet of Lord Krishna within his heart. So such an instance of remembrance is the result of constant practice. And the conclusion is that the devotees who are constantly thinking of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, even if they're momentarily inattentive, will see the figure of Krishna appearing within their hearts. this is called Vyabhichari Bhava, this overwhelming ecstatic love. Lord Brahma, of course, was literally seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead externally, and for him the remembrance was producing this overwhelming ecstatic love, because he had the understanding that it was the same Supreme Person that was worshipable for him, and he had been worshipping Lord Krishna in the Narayan form. So this was very much a stimulant for ecstatic love. Now, in the next chapter, we're going to hear that Lord Brahma will display a different symptom of ecstatic love, and that is humility. So humility is defined in a very interesting way in the Nectar of Devotion. It's defined as a state of weakness caused by fear or offensiveness or distress. Now, this is interesting. And as a result of being in this state of weakness or offensiveness, one becomes very talkative. So this is the description or the definition in Nectar of Devotion. And in addition to becoming very talkative, one becomes very small in one's heart, dirty in one's mind, and full of anxiety and inactive. In the 65th verse that we had just read, there's a mirroring of this definition of humility, which is revealing what's going to come, because this is how it's stated here in the 65th verse. Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated and his body trembling, very humbly began with faltering words to praise Krishna. So we get a sense that just the fact that his head is bent low means that there's this humility that's present. There's that kind of weakness, feeling small in heart, dirty in mind, full of anxiety. So that's Lord Brahma. And in a similar way, Srila Sanatana Goswami, who's actually meditated on how Sukadeva Goswami is presenting these pastimes of Lord Krishna in the 10th canto in his own meditation, where he's cherishing these narrations of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, he puts this little section in this kind of way. This is his summary section. You withdrew, referring to Krishna, the cows and boys you had created and made Brahma feel ashamed. Brahma, who now saw the truth, drenched your feet with tears of ecstasy as you received his prayers. So that's from text 149, from Srila Sanatana Goswami's meditation. And Srila Sanatana Goswami offers his obeisances at this point in the narration. And Lord Brahma, seeing the truth, we can understand by an explanation given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur of what is transpiring here. So this is a breakdown by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He explains the soul is spiritual. Therefore, the qualities of the self, knowledge and knowledge of other objects are naturally present within one as the soul. So it's just by this quality of self-knowledge that one can realize oneself. So this means that there's a quality of knowing other objects, so one can realize all those other objects. So these qualities actually make up that constitutional nature of the living entity, and hence the living entity doesn't have to take shelter of another kind of instrument in order to understand the supreme object. There's that ability to understand. And so this makes up what's called a samadhi or a trance, because one has this understanding of oneself and a knowledge of other objects. It's naturally present there. So because one has this quality of knowing other objects, one can realize all those other objects. And that's what's transpired with Brahma. He's realized this point, that a small innocent boy with a morsel of food in his hand is actually the same supreme worshipable Lord Narayan. So he's in a state of trance, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls this kind of samadhi or trance faultless. So It's a stage of perfection, actually. And Lord Krishna defines this very elaborately in Bhagavad Gita. He says, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In this joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material conduct. It's from Bhagavad Gita 6:23. So one can understand that this kind of samadhic or trance state, epitomized by Lord Brahma here, revealing these ecstatic symptoms, he's rising and falling or falling down, paying his obeisances repeatedly, means he's in this position of boundless transcendental happiness, which he's realized through transcendental senses, means that, you know, he's able to realize who that Supreme Person is. That same Supreme Person is that small boy standing there with a morsel of food. this chit shakti, or this internal potency, this transcendental potency by which any living entity becomes aware of his constitutional position in relation to the supreme object, Lord Krishna. It's a transcendental potency. And Lord Brahma shows this natural samadhi that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur defines it as, because he's able to easily realize this eternal truth of Krishna's existence as a small boy in Vrindavan. And Lord Brahma's attaining the lotus feet of Lord Krishna was such that he saw, and this is stated here, he saw the Lord with only two eyes because all eight of his eyes were brimming with tears. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that Lord Brahma, with his two hands, wipe the two eyes on each of his lotus faces. So, and Srila Prabhupada repeats that in the purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's statements. Lord Brahma praised Lord Krishna with a choked up voice. This whole, these two simple verses that we're looking at today, I kept going back to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his breakdown, because this is such a significant point of realization for Lord Brahma and the ecstasy it arouses in him. So there was a whole process to get there, and it applies to any spirit soul. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he does a breakdown of what is realized by this faultless or natural samadhi or internal trance that is there, that's practiced by spirit soul in relation to the supreme object, Lord Krishna. So this is how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur breaks it down. It says, number one, there's the self. Number two, there's the significance of the self. So you need to acknowledge that. Then three, there's the supreme shelter for that self. Then four, there's the relationship between the sheltered and the shelter. So it's all, you know, very precise. Then there's 5, the beauty of the relationship between the sheltered and the shelter. And 6, there's the abode of the sheltered and the shelter. And 7, there's the eternal pastimes between the sheltered and the shelter. 8, there's the absolute time factor. 9, there's the various moods of the sheltered. And here we're reading that particular component, the mood of the sheltered, because Lord Brahma is revealing his completely ecstatic mood. And it's accompanied, what we know from Srila Sanatana Goswami's meditation on this particular section, there's some shame there as well. Then going on with Srila Bhaktivinoda's breakdown, you know, it's very precise, you know, and it's very conscious, this kind of breakdown of this trance state or this internal samadhi. Then there's the energies of the shelter, so Lord Krishna. And Brahma certainly got a demonstration of the energies of the shelter or Lord Krishna through Krishna actually manifesting himself in a second set of cowherd boys and calves. And then at the same time, transforming that second set into Vishnu forms. So he certainly got exposed to the energies of the shelter. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the next point is the advancement and degradation of the sheltered by the energies of the shelter. And this is what we're witnessing. You could say Lord Brahma certainly made huge advancement because of the energies employed by Lord Krishna. So he came to this point of this moment of realization and the ecstatic love that manifested from him because of the energies employed by Lord Krishna. So it allowed for advancement of Lord Brahma. Then the next point, which I think is about 12, Srila Bhaktivinoda says there's a misidentification of the degraded sheltered. So moments when one forgets, and that's what happened to Lord Brahma. So this is all part of the process. The samadhi state actually involves these kind of conscious components. So there's this conscious component that there can be a misidentification of the degraded sheltered. So Lord Brahma, he certainly made that mistake because he actually thought that perhaps he's superior to his master. So that misidentification, and you could say it's a kind of degradation, making that mistake, meaning in some sense he degraded himself by actually being so impertinent as to take away the boys and calves from Lord Krishna. Then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur opens the 13th point. There's the cultivation of devotion for restoration of the degraded sheltered. So Lord Brahma is certainly cultivating devotion here. We're going to get a huge exposé of his prayers where he's restoring that relationship with his shelter. And then the 14th point is the degraded shelter regains their constitutional position through devotional service. So Lord Brahma will certainly regain his constitutional position. He gets back into balance of understanding the self, the whole cycle, the self, the significance of the self, the supreme shelter, the relationship between the sheltered and the sheltered, the beauty of the relationship between the sheltered and the sheltered. So all this will play itself out. I mean, it's a sequence of steps, very conscious steps. I mean, not that they're exactly sequential, but there's the interplay. All these components are there. So just taking into account the last of these components connected to the state of samadhi or practice by a spirit soul, as Bhishila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's breakdown. Lord Brahma, he's the degraded shelter regaining his constitutional position through devotional service. I mean, he made a mistake. he made a mistake in terms of his identity. So he's regaining his constitutional position, understanding properly his relationship with the Supreme Lord. And so we're going to get him very in depth explaining his constitutional position through the service that he's going to be performing, through expressing his heartfelt prayers to his shelter, Lord Krishna. And here we've just, at this point, it's at the threshold of what's coming up. Brahma praises Lord Krishna with a choked up voice, and there's such a great word that indicates this faltering voice. It's gadgadaya. It sounds, you know, onomatopoeic, where you actually, the word indicates something of the meaning. So the faltering voice, gadgadaya. Very nice. So, now, Brahma is going to begin by focusing on the beauty, the qualities, the activities, and form of the shelter. So this will be part of his regaining his constitutional position through devotional service. So his first prayer that's going to be coming up, so I'm going to read that because it's of relevance to this point, of Srila Bhaktivinoda's breakdown of the state of samadhi and its various components. So this is Brahma restoring. This is that point, the cultivation of devotion for restoration of the degraded shelter. So he's the degraded sheltered, and he's going to attempt to restore his position. So, my dear Lord, you are the most worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances. So he comes to that point, and this is through this extraordinary moment where Lord Krishna has allowed him to realize who he is, that simple, small boy in Vrindavan with a morsel of foodstuff in his hand with his cowherd friends and calves and cows. So this is what I was able to extract from this verse. If there's any thoughts on this, oh. It's there, the image is back. The image is returned. Yes, you're there.
Sorry.
Thank you, Masaji, for your class, and made a lot of wonderful points. You ended it with the beginning of Brahma's prayers of offering his humble obeisances. And basically these last few verses are describing Lord Brahma, you know, bowing down to Krishna, offering dandavats, and feeling ecstasy from doing so. And particularly in Prabhupada's purport to this verse, it says Brahma was falling down in ecstasy, and the verse says he was rising and falling again, feeling ecstasy, offering his obeisances to Krishna, essentially. And so my comment and question is related to the point, kind of to Prabhupada's also, these are related, but related to Prabhupada's previous verse and purport from verse 61, where Prabhupada makes a very profound statement. He quotes another pastime of Lord Brahma, where Brahma entered Dwarka and they asked, which Brahma are you? And over the course of that pastime, Brahma realized he wasn't the only Brahma. There was many Brahmas kind of, you know, superior in intelligence than him. However, I've never, I have to read those particular verses again, but from what I remember of those verses, I don't recall Brahma rising and falling again and offering his obeisances to the other Brahmas and crying in ecstasy. So my whole point of bringing this point up is that it's easy to show our rising and falling obeisances to the guru, but it's not so easy to do it among our peers or other devotees other than our guru, whoever it is, no matter how. And Prabhupada mentions this point in this verse 2 of the same purport of verse 61 of this chapter. And I'd like to expand on those points. Maybe you could expand also. He says, people generally do not appreciate someone unless he shows something wonderful. And for 40 years, Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness. Did anyone appreciate him from an external point? But when he presented something very wonderful, oh, now I appreciate you. And we see this throughout the scriptures and many times, Daksha, for example, he not only didn't appreciate Lord Shiva, but he directly criticized him, like, you're filthy, you're poor, you're dirty. Same with Hiranyakashipu. He couldn't appreciate Prabhupada, even when Prahlad manifested something wonderful. He tried to kill Prahlad in many ways, throw him in fire under elephants, and Prahlad manifested something very wonderful. He didn't die, but Hiranyakashipu still can appreciate it. That's the amazing thing. And we see in the material world, people generally only appreciate somebody who's very powerful, who could arguably give us a reaction, like police officers. We appreciate their power. You know, people who, if we're looking for some donation, we definitely offer our respects to rich donors. Our teachers could make us fail, so we offer our respects to them. And so we see in the scriptures, not only do people not appreciate, you know, someone unless they display something wonderful, but they could become very antagonistic. They lose their tolerance because they think, I won't receive a reaction, I'm more powerful than them. And there's a nice quote by Buddha. He says, and this is an appreciation of Prabhupada and Prabhupada's early disciples, like Mukunda Goswami, because they appreciate Prabhupada when he was, you quote unquote, nobody. He was always somebody, great spiritualist. But there was one video, Mukunda Goswami says, I obviously see he was a great personality, a great scholar. The slokas he recited were very beautiful, philosophical. He was obviously, from my point of view, I mean, I would like to say I would appreciate people when they're unknown, but, you know, I have to be humble, you know. So it's nice to glorify those early devotees who appreciated Prabhupada and helped them expand the movement. And so there's a nice quote by Buddha that says, if a fool be associated with a wise man, even for all his life, he will perceive the truth as much as a spoon perceives the taste of soup. If an intelligent man be associated with a wise man for 1 minute only, he will perceive the truth as much as the tongue perceives the taste of soup. And my last point I would like to mention, these are some points, but my last point in regards to this verse today is that of offering our obeisances not to our guru, but even to pretty much anyone. One lecture by Prabhupada, I don't remember what the lecture calls, but there was a debate, but Prabhupada was having a discussion with a student. And the student brought up a dilemma that we all face in our spiritual life in general, is that the student was basically bringing a point to Prabhupada. You know, I can't really bow down. So, you know, somebody, you know, a personality, you know, because, you know, first of all, I don't know if I could really trust them. Why would I bow down to, a man or, you know, people that I don't know if I could really trust? So I don't bow down to anyone, essentially. It wasn't in a challenging mode, but Prabhupada made a very profound point. He told this student, you're forced to bow down to everything. You're forced to bow down to death. You're forced to bow down to lust. You're forced to bow down to pretty much everything. And so Prabhupada says, this bowing down, that's our constitutional position. It will continue. But where is that person we should bow down to. That's what we should see. But we're forced to bow down to everything. And the reason I appreciate this point, and this is my last point you could expand on, is that sometimes in our Christian consciousness, we may say, when we have disagreements with devotees or other people, we may say, you know, I would never associate with them, I would never bow down to them. But we see that if we don't bow down to people in appreciation or in forgiveness, bow down to appreciation and forgiveness, then we're forced, like a slave, we're forced to bow down to envy or to vengeance. And we see the demarcation between a free person and a slave is that a free person is happy and a slave is unhappy. So when we're forced to bow down to envy and vengeance, what does that mean? We're a slave. So you might as well bow down in appreciation. So my question is, what are some steps we could take to realize that we're actually bowing down at every moment, and we're actually making ourselves very miserable when we don't bow down, maybe not physically to devotees and other people, but when we don't bow down in humility, patience, tolerance, and forgiveness, we're actually making ourselves more enslaved and entangled in the molds of material nature. And therefore, we may lose our taste in Krishna concomitant apparatus. So what are some steps we could do to bow down in humility, because we're forced to bow down to everything in every way? So anyway, that was kind of my question. I don't know if I asked it properly, but anyway, some points I appreciated from Prabhupada.
Well, you actually gave your realization, so it doesn't require an answer specifically, or it's not really that a question needs to be asked, because actually we're sharing a realization. Well, it seems you've understood it well, because you gave examples where you've made the distinction between the ease with which one can you know, be respectful towards, and even you know, take it on a further level of spiritual respect for one's paying obeisances to someone. You gave examples, you know, on the material level, might be a simple thing like a policeman who holds some power, and then on the other end of the spectrum, on the spiritual side, just devotees that one can be respectful towards, very obviously so if it's one spiritual master. But then of course you were bringing up that you know, it's more difficult to do that with regular devotees. So your realization really was that actually, though one may hesitate to bow down to fellow devotees or, you know, experience that respect in one's heart, nevertheless, one was still bowing down to, you know, one's lower nature and the pushings of the lower nature, the, you know, lustfulness or greediness or, you know, whatever bad quality might be there. So you actually shared a realization, and I think the this point of feeling respectful towards other devotees, in many cases one looks at what somebody represents. So the policeman represents, on the material level, order and the law of the government, the law of the state. And so one actually respects the person as a representative of the broader structure, who's helping to implement that structure. So it's a very similar thing in spiritual life. The particular role that the devotee plays calls for a certain kind of respect, because they're fulfilling the obligations and duties that form part of the spiritual structure. So let's say a temple president has the role to see that the Sangha of devotees is proceeding in a very smooth, harmonious way, that the roles that they're occupying are conducive for their development in their spiritual life. So, by virtue of the person's position, one offers respect because one understands that they're actually holding together and seeing that the tenets of spiritual life are playing themselves out correctly so that the institution is functioning cohesively. So because of that, one can offer respects by virtue of the role that the person is playing. So if one lets it slide into that one's mind is judging, one's going to run into trouble. So in all cases, it's much easier when one considers the role that the person's taking. So for instance, a young person may sit on the Vyasasan and deliver a class. One pays obeisances to the person because the person is speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, is communicating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. One doesn't look at the age of the person or, you know, their qualifications on material, spiritual level. One just takes it that the person needs to be accorded respect by virtue of the fact that they're the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's a similar thing. It helps one to expand one's outlook and see that the role that the person is playing. And that makes it so much easier. So it's a similar thing. The spiritual master is considered as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one offers all one's devotion to the spiritual master in the same way one would to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's like that. You can't separate out the role from the view one holds of the person. Rather, that should be the prominent feature. So even a regular devotee is understood to be a servitor of the Supreme Personality of God. That's the role they're occupying. So it's not a casual role. It's not an insignificant role. They're a servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a very significant position. Very significant. Means that they're conscious of all these steps. They're participating in these steps very consciously that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has broken down. They understand the self. They understand the relationship with the... They see themselves as sheltered by the shelter. They understand the beauty of their relationship with the shelter, the Supreme Object, Lord Krishna. So it's an individual with an advanced understanding. One gives respect to that, knowing that. So it's a response to your realization, actually.
Thank you for your response. And you were mentioning how... a comment in response to your beginning of your answer is that generally we offer respect to a government official, police officer, because they're maintaining the social structure you were mentioning. That's a good point. I think very crook officers, but I think in general, if there were no officers at all, people would be very miserable, obviously, because it would just be a lawless society. So even the few lawless officers, I think definitely everyone would appreciate, you know, that there has to be some government structure explained in the Bhagavatam. But on the flip side of the coin, obviously, I can speak for myself from personal experience. That's not why I respect, this particular incident, that's not why I respected the officer. There was a couple of times, but when I was going home at night one time, the police stopped me, and they said there was a robbery recently nearby. And they said, of course, I knew they were lying. They said, we heard there was a description of somebody with your color jacket or something like that. I didn't tell him. You expect me to believe that? You're lying, officer. I didn't tell him that. So he says, obviously, because he has more powerful than me. So I respect him because he has that gun. And he also said, let me look in your bag. And I was like, go ahead, right ahead. I didn't say nothing. I didn't even move my hands. When they drove in a curve, I made sure I didn't move my hands. So that's not why I respected them. And I respected them because they had more power than me. They have a gun, and we obviously see on TV. So I was very, but how to maintain our, like I said, that's the most difficult thing, because generally we hear in the classes, we hear tolerance is, it's so hard. It's so, very difficult. I'm like, no, when somebody's more powerful than you, tolerance is easy. It's a piece of cake. But how to develop this tolerance, and that's what I've learned in my Christian country, because definitely Christians definitely giving me some reactions for not being tolerant with devotees. I think I could say anything I want, but I've done a lot of posh washing them out here at the temple, and I really realized that Christian gives you, here's a lesson. I was sharing a lesson that I never forgot, and I was sharing with a devotee recently, just the other day. I forgot who it was. But one thing I really appreciate about Krishna Smarana Prabhu when he was here, and he never made any excuses for himself. There was a nice, like I said, I never forgot this lesson. So during Kartik, Krishna Smarana Prabhu, he was offering the ghee lamp, and somehow or other he burned his hand pretty badly. And so then he taped his hand and he gave a Bhagavatam class mentioning it. I never forgot the point he made. And then I watched it in my own life and I was like, oh yes, it's true. The point he made was that these are just not random incidents. Krishna, a blade of grass can't move without Krishna's sanction, first of all. And he says, whenever you get some reaction like this, you have to think in the moment, what was your mentality during that moment, during that particular incident? And then it's not a random incident. We read the scriptures. So then he was like, then you'll realize that probably I didn't have the right mentality at that particular time. And Krishna gives you some reactions. So I've noticed that in my life, I never forgot that lesson. And so over the course of washing so many pots, if I didn't have any right mentality with any devotee, like maybe it was their turn to wash or help me, they wouldn't, I'll criticize them, or even I'll directly say something to them. I will always cut my hand. And so that's why I always used to wash the knives first. That's why I could think negatively about devotees and not get a reaction. That's a joke, but that's what I did actually. But in this way, when I watched the pots and the lesson I got from Krishna Smarana Prabhu, and then the reading the Bhagavatam that solidified these lessons, I really realized is that it's not that we should just display our tolerance before the spiritual master because he could get us initiation, and not, to someone who can't get us into the disciple succession VIP of initiation. Krishna, he's all powerful, and just like a child, if you mess with a police officer's child or the president's child, it's going to be the same reaction. Therefore, the lessons, the Prabhupada mentioned these lessons now, so I really appreciate these lessons that you can't just say or even think about, because when you think, it's going to eventually manifest either behind people's backs. So that's what I really appreciate is that, and we see that it doesn't matter how much you criticize others behind people's backs or say nothing, anything. We see that Hiranyakashipu couldn't kill Prahlad. We can't kill anyone's reputation or anything without Krishna's sanction. So if Krishna's going to give whatever person's destiny, then why am I going to open my big mouth? So that's what I really appreciate. And so the sum of all these lessons are learned is a nice quote that I heard. And it says, nothing will give you greater peace than minding your own business. And I was very peaceful when I read this quote. I was like, oh, these are all the lessons I've learned. Mind my own business. And therefore, I could be a little bit more happy. And so anyway, I'm glad you found that funny.
Well, thank
you. Could expand on some of those points if you like, but I just wanted to share those.
Thank you for sharing what you've come to understand over time of one's mentality, particularly when one's performing some service, being of such significance. Yeah, I mean, Lord Brahma had, I suppose, a moment where his mentality needed correction. For him, Krishna orchestrated in a way that you know, brought some shame for his having wanted to challenge Krishna. But it also allowed for this tremendous realization where he got, it increased his ecstatic love. So Krishna's very kind, even though there may appear to be that reaction, one comes to have greater insight into the workings of Lord Krishna and his kindness to show one the particular thing that needs attention. So it's never purely punitive if there is reaction. It's actually done in such a way that it increases one's sense of the greatness of Krishna. So it puts one in a better position where there's that natural development of some humility. You know, I'm quite small and insignificant in relation to Lord Krishna. So that puts one in a very strong position. Yeah, so that's just a comment on that. And I think that's something that was seen in this particular section with Lord Brahma. He actually came, because of his humility, we're going to hear all these beautiful prayers where he's restoring his relationship. So I think in the same way, it helps one in one's own personal relationships with others when Krishna's kindly revealed to one what needs some attention, because then you become more conscious, oh, this is what needs attention, and you were explaining what you came to understand, oh, I need to actually mind my own business a bit more. Okay. So, and that's a tremendous thing. It's such a kindness on the part of Lord Krishna, because then it improves one's relationships with others, because as you were explaining, one's not carrying a certain mindset or a judgment of others. So, well, thank you very much for sharing. Jai Baladev, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.